Hello, I'm Sophia Schellenberg, and this is number 0558 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0558. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet actress Alison Arngrim, best known for playing evil Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie. She's been reading the original Little House books every day live on Facebook during the lockdown. How did this all start?
I got to do something that's calming and relaxing. I'll go back to the beginning. I'll read the Little House books. Swear I was going to just sit and read them in my living room. And then I went, well, if I feel better doing this, maybe other people would like it. I should share. So I went on Facebook Live. And every day at 1:30, I sat down and I put the phone in a tripod. And I get my bonnet and, milk and cookies, a snack of some kind. And I turn on Facebook Live and I read two chapters of Little House on the Prairie.
Vicki McLeod is the author of You and the Internet of Things.
It's partly called that because, you know, the Internet of Things, or the IoT is the acronym that we use, is, I think it's emerging technology. If you were out shopping, for example, for an appliance or a new toaster or something right now, you would have a really hard time finding what we call like a dumb appliance, something that's not smart, that's not capable of connecting, that doesn't have some form of artificial intelligence driving its function.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0558, was the lovely Sophia Schellenberg, with whom I went to high school with back in the day. Sophia would like everyone to know of the great work that Sun Youth here in Montreal does, and hopes that you will help to support the Sun Youth organization in their efforts. For those of you who don't know, Sun Youth has been taking care of Montrealers for over 60 years by providing individuals and families in need a range of emergency services that ensure their basic needs and maintain their integrity. They also contribute actively to crime prevention and promote physical, social, and intellectual development of the youth through education, sports, and recreation. And with all that the world is currently going through these days, never has Sun Youth been needed more than now. So visit sunyouthorg.com online to find out more and to also learn how you can help. Thank you very much, Miss Schellenberg, the lovely Sophia Schellenberg, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, and for also reminding us of the great work that Sun Youth does each and every day, and especially now. And Sophia, it is really nice to hear your voice again, especially here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, and also on Spotify. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? If you've been watching cable news TV channels or listening to talk radio or podcasts, then you know that there are a plethora of experts out there who have been answering queries from the general public who are asking a myriad of questions about the coronavirus. I must admit, I've learned a lot from what the common man or woman will ask professionals. Case in point, this story that comes from Down Under, literally. There is a podcast in Australia from ABC Radio called the CoronaCast Podcast. On a recent episode, a physician by the name of Dr. Norman Swan was the guest. A question came in that wanted to get to the bottom of things.
Final question from an audience member for you today. This is David with a hard-hitting question. If the virus can turn up in feces, does that mean that farts could be a transmission route?
You get really intelligent, pointed questions on CoronaCast, and this is no doubt one of them. Well, luckily, we wear a mask which covers our farts all the time. So I think that
must.
You know, even if it were to, I mean, so I think that what we should do in terms of social distancing and being safe is that a policy on the part of the entire Australian population should be that you don't fart close to other people and that you don't fart with your bottom bare.
This is excellent advice from Dr. Swan. Thank you so much for clearing that up.
Yeah, science-based. This is hardcore evidence here we're talking about.
No bare bottoms.
No bare bottom farting.
Well, that's one less thing to worry about. Now back to watching that campfire scene from Blazing Saddles. An unnamed 22-year-old Chinese woman has spent the last 14 years trying to discover the cause of her persistent cough. So no, this is not a coronavirus or COVID-19 story. This cough started when she suffered a serious fit of coughing as a child. Over the years, she has been misdiagnosed numerous times, but as she recently was preparing for an unrelated surgery, the mystery was solved. Dr. Wang Ziyang of Guangzhou University of Chinese Medicine ordered CT scans that revealed a foreign object in her right lung that turned out to be a chicken bone fragment just over half an inch long. Doctors said she had probably inhaled it at 8 years old when the coughing started. Wow. I can just hear the surgical crew singing in the operating room now.
Disconnect them bones, them. Drive bones to disconnect them bones, them. Drive bones to disconnect them bones, them. Drive bones, now hear the word of the Lord.
Okay, admittedly, I guess Chinese doctors wouldn't sing like a black gospel group, but dare to dream. 30-year-old Ethan Palazzo of Collingswood, New Jersey, was arrested by police in Old Forge, who found him naked inside a funeral home on April 11th. According to a criminal complaint, Palazzo allegedly broke into the Thomas P. Kearney funeral home at around 8 p.m., then rummaged through the facility's chemical closet and left a cold bottle of beer in a display casket. Palazzo smelled of alcohol and declined to give police a motive for his trespassing. He was charged with burglary, criminal trespass, and criminal mischief. You know, I don't really need a motive for his trespassing in a funeral parlor. I'm just curious for his motive for being naked in a funeral parlor. I'm just hoping this isn't his version of Netflix and chill. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, early in the morning of April 15th, an unidentified driver smashed his yellow Mustang into a fence in Marin County, California. California Highway Patrol Officer Andrew Barkley later recounted what followed. The driver tried to back out of the fence, but failed to realize he was in drive and crashed through the home instead. The homeowner came out to investigate and noted the driver's impaired state, removed the keys from the Mustang, and returned inside to call police. The driver then discovered the keys inside the homeowner's Toyota and tried to make his getaway, but he shifted the car into drive and barreled through the house once more, coming to rest alongside his Mustang. Well, at least apparently he can parallel park. When the homeowner again tried to take those keys away, the driver allegedly hit him repeatedly, causing major injuries. CHP arrested the driver for suspicion of DUI involving drugs, battery, and theft of a vehicle. Wow, this poor, poor homeowner. How do you explain this to your insurance company? You know, this sounds like one of those comical farmers insurance commercials.
At Farmers, we know a thing or two because we've seen a thing or two.
We are farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Well, that jingle will be in your head for the rest of the day, won't it? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Just like everyone else, Allison Armgram is social distancing because of the coronavirus pandemic, but she's still keeping busy, the actress who played Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie decided she needed to do something. That something is to read all the Little House books, the complete works of Laura Ingalls Wilder, live on Facebook, a chapter or two at a time, every single day, while wearing a bonnet. Allison joins us on the line from Los Angeles. Hi, Allison.
Hi, it sounds crazy when you say it. Okay, it is crazy.
Yeah,
literally, when this hit, and I had just come back from a tour of France, I had managed to get in my last autograph show in February in Arkansas, and then everything in the world got canceled. I'm very lucky my husband, Bob, is listed as an essential employee. It's infrastructure, construction things, so for the airport, so he has to go. But I realized everything I do creatively and for a living went poof! And I went, well, this is interesting, but what exactly am I supposed to do now? And I thought, I got to do something that's calming and relaxing. I'll go back to the beginning. I'll read the Little House books. Swear I was going to just sit and read them in my living room. And then I went, well, if I feel better doing this, maybe other people would like it. I should share. So I went on Facebook Live. And I, every day at 1:30, okay, I was late yesterday. We did 3:30. We changed time occasionally. I sat down and I put the phone in a tripod and I get my bonnet and, you know, milk and cookies, a snack of some kind. And I turn on Facebook Live and I read two chapters of Little House on the Prairie.
And when did you start this?
I actually have to, like, think. I don't remember. It's been weeks because it's become this ritual. I'm actually having to go back and look at my videos. It's been a couple of weeks. Well, I'm on the third book, for heaven's sake. I started doing this, I guess, pretty early on in this madness. Because there's a Charlotte radio. I did that. So it was before April 7th, definitely. Somewhere, I guess, April. Because I've read all of Little House in the Big Woods. And then I started to do Farmer Boy, which is about Almanzo, but I talked to Dean Butler, who played Almanzo in Little House on the Prairie, and I said, do you want to read a chapter of Farmer Boy, because it's all about your character? He wound up reading the whole book, Farmer Boy, and now I'm doing Little House on the Prairie, which is the third book, and we're blazing through that, and then it's going to be On the Banks of Plum Creek, and of course Charlotte Stewart, who played Miss Beadle, will then sort of guest with us and read a couple chapters. So this has been going on for three books. I actually have to look at my page and, like, look at videos and go, because we kept them up there. So somewhere is the video of when I started this madness. Wait, there's my picture. My photo is a picture of me in a bonnet. So when did I take this thing? Oh, March 21st, and that was probably a couple readings in. So, yeah, somewhere... Well, everything kind of shut down around the 13th. So, yes, it was that week. It was somewhere in that second, the first week of the shutdown, about third week of March, I started with Little House in the Big Woods. And I've been cranking it out every day, Saturdays and Sundays. And we've found 1:30 is a good time for people. And unless they have something going, I have to move it to a different time.
Now, you played Nellie Olson for years on Little House on the Prairie. Mm-hmm. And now that you're reading these books out loud, I'm just wondering, do you have a nicer inflection when you get to the parts that involve Nellie? Is she nicer in your reading?
Well, that is the next book. We're just a few chapters away, and then it's when they go to On the Banks of Plum Creek. Because in the book, Little House on the Prairie, the one I'm in now, is the book the pilot was based on. And it's so crazy, because just now I was listening to Melissa Gilbert and her husband, Timothy Busfield, who are up in a cabin in the Catskills hiding out, are doing a podcast. And she just did a whole podcast talking about Little House on the Prairie. And it was really weird, because I'm like, right, because the pilot is based on the second book, the third book, Little House on the Prairie, and the series is based on the fourth book, On the Banks of Plum Creek, when they go to Walnut Grove. Very complicated. Hardcore fans know this. Hardcore fans are going, yes, of course, we all know that. But Banks of Plum Creek is when Nellie shows up, and I'm really excited about that, because one of the first lines about Nellie is, Nellie Olson was very pretty. I like that part. I'm going to wear the wig for that. I got the bonnet, but I have the wig. Not the wig, but I have a wig. And I will wear the Nellie wig when I start reading Nellie scenes. I am that insane, yes.
Had you read the books before, by the way? Even though you played the part, had you read the books?
Yes, I did. I had not read them before the show. This is a big thing with all the actors of the show. We kind of go, had any of you read the books before we did this thing? Melissa had read like one or two of the books because she was at that age in school. She'd read, I think, A Little House in the Big Woods, but almost no one in the cast, I mean, Michael Landon had read the books. I had never read the books when I went to the audition and got the show. It was very embarrassing. They're like, oh, we're making a show about these books. And I was like, who? Soon as I got the part, I was like, oh my God. And I went out and got On the Banks of Plum Creek and read all about Nellie Olson. Went, oh, wow, okay. Charlotte Stewart, who was Miss Beadle, says she got the part, same thing. She got the part and she went out and bought a book, and I think it was By the Shores of Silver Lake. It's one of the really sad ones. And she said, I start reading the book, and in five pages, you know, Mary's gone blind and the dog dies. And she was sort of horrified. She's like, this sounds very sad. So we all wound up running out and buying the book. So I read the books right after I got the job. And then over the years, I've gone back and reread them. And just recently, in the last years, they came out on Kindle. So they are out on Kindle. And so I was reading them on my Kindle and going, these are really good. And so I have the hardcovers, and I have them all on Kindle. And so that's when I said, I'm going to go back and really read them, just sit down and read them from beginning to end. Because I haven't read them in order. I never read them in order. And but now I decide, well, why not do it live?
Has the way you look at the books changed? Because when you first read them, you had the part, so you were basically a child at the time.
Right.
Now you're an adult.
At the time, I was just very, very interested to see what was Nellie Olson like. I was very excited because the drawings of Nellie Olson looked a lot like me. I looked like the drawings. I was like, cool, score. And it was interesting to read that she was mean in the books before, you know, I was like, okay, I get the picture here. She's mean in the books. She's mean in the show. Much meaner in the show, but she was definitely mean, terrible in the books. And then as I got older and I found out all this stuff that Laura Ingalls based the character of Nellie on three people, there really is a Nellie. There was a Nellie Owens, the Owens family in Walnut Grove. But Nellie and Willie Owens, they didn't follow the Ingalls to South Dakota and all this stuff, whereas Nellie keeps showing up as a teenager and all that didn't happen. So Laura made up all this stuff. There was a girl named Genevieve Masters and a girl named Stella Gilbert. And Laura Ingalls Wilder had battles with them as a teenager, and so she took what they did and what Nellie Owens did and made it all one person. Because the books are historical fiction. They are novels. They're not, you know, the Bible. so there's a lot of made-up stuff, like Mr. Edwards. There is no Mr. Edwards. There was a guy that the family hung out with, but there was nobody named Mr. Edwards. She changed names. She changed timelines. So knowing that is freaky. And then as an adult, there's a lot of stuff going on in these books that is over the heads of the kids. There's like jokes because Pa is not the best farmer. He's not really good at this. They keep moving. When they move to Plum Creek and he's getting a great deal on the little soddy house they move into and getting oxen instead of the horses and all this, he can't figure out why the guy wants to give up this chunk of farmland in this house, why he and his wife seem to be so happy to get out of town. And he's Swedish, so he speaks very little English, so he and Pa has a hell of a time finding out what this guy is talking about. So they make this great deal. He gets a steal, his house, the farm. I don't know why he wanted to leave. He said something about grasshopper weather. He doesn't get it that this guy has figured out there's a plague of locusts coming. There are going to be no crops because the grasshoppers are coming back, and he knows this. So he's selling the whole thing cheap and getting out of town, and just sold Pa a whole farm load of wheat when the other farmers know that the grasshoppers are coming. And Pa does not know this. Pa does not know to recognize that there's about to be a plague of locusts. And it's like, oh, who could have foreseen such a thing? And Pa does a bunch of dopey things. Little House on the Prairie, when they're in Kansas, is very much all about the battle between the government, the settlers, and the Native Americans. And Laura is quite pointed in arguing with her parents and saying, but it's Indian country. You said it's theirs. Isn't it their land? What do you mean they're moving? Why are we making them move? And Laura keeps arguing for the Native Americans. It's a lot of stuff going on in these books that 8-year-olds are missing totally.
You sound so animated just talking about this here. I can imagine what it's like, and people should go to your website, bonnetheads.com. I could imagine what it's like when people hear you reading the stories out loud on Facebook. When you first started this a few weeks back, what was your anticipation, and what has it grown into since you've been doing this?
It's crazy. I didn't know. Like I said, I was like everyone else. You know, I had lunch with a friend. Last time I was like out anywhere, March 11th. And we said, this is getting kind of intense. We were outdoors at a restaurant where we could still go. And it was my friend who was immune compromised and wound up being like later that day, his doctor called and was like, you're not still going out, are you? Are you crazy? Go home. And we had like the last lunch and went shopping for like cat food and hung out. And we said, this is getting weird. We should probably go get some groceries and cat food. And then like by the 13th, it was a national emergency. And we're all, by the next week, we're all quarantined. We're all told, please stay home. And he was told by his doctor, do not even open your front door. Just forget it. So I've been like, you know, with his friends taking him stuff and things. So we knew he came suddenly. And like I said, everything I was doing, all I just watched everything kind of get canceled. And my husband said, well, don't freak out. I mean, you know, I'm still working. We're not, you know, we're not going to starve to death here. But I said, yeah, but I'm used to having a job. But I didn't know what to do. And that's, I literally, for myself, I thought this would be a cool thing to do. And then I thought, well, I should share it. I had no idea. I thought, well, people will be amused. Someone may like it. There obviously are people who really love the books and who find the idea of me in a bonnet amusing. I did not know I would get 60,000 views. I did not anticipate anything along this line. The first video got 60,000 views, and because they keep rewatching them and they keep sharing them. And I'm looking, going 20,000 views, 40,000 views, 60,000. These all have like insane number of views. There's over 1,000 people who log on live, absolutely every day. There's at least 1,000 people who don't miss it. And then they said, can we get bonnets? I had a bag of bonnets. I had done an autograph show, and I had ordered some bonnets from Walnut Grove, Minnesota, the museum, and sold them at autograph shows. So I said, yeah, well, you want to buy a bonnet? I got some I ran out of bonnets. I'm now, like, calling Walnut Grove every week going, oh, my God, can you send me more bonnets? And now people have bonnets, and they're taking pictures of themselves wearing their bonnets, holding their little house books, and reading along and sending me the photos of them in the bonnets. It's insane.
Yes, it is. But think of what it's doing for the bonnet industry. Anyway, we're talking with Allison Arngrim here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll continue talking with Allison on the other side. Don't go away.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. Choosy mothers choose the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. If your mother didn't choose it for you, well, I guess she just doesn't love you.
And this is the Stuff File program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Just click on the Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify buttons located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. And the music you're hearing right now, that, of course, is the theme song to Little House on the Prairie. That brings back memories, doesn't it? That's because we're talking to one of the stars. We are talking with Allison Arngrim, who is best known for playing the role of Nellie Olson on Little House on the Prairie, as she continues to read the original novels online, on Facebook, daily, a chapter or two at a time, every single day, while wearing a bonnet. Now, you mentioned...
And different color bonnets. I try to wear a different bonnet a day, and I always coordinate my bonnet with what I'm wearing. I had a lovely matching red blouse and red bonnet yesterday.
Wow. Now, you...
It was a Christmas sequence.
You mentioned earlier Dean Butler.
Yeah.
Are you getting other cast members, other surviving cast members to get together and read as well, besides Dean?
Yes, people have come forward and said, can I do one? Can I do one? I believe like I said, Charlotte Stewart, who's Miss Beadle, is definitely on because Banks of Plum Creek has Miss Beadle's introduction. So she's absolutely going to read some Miss Beadle stuff and chapters from that. And then Baby Carrie and Baby Grace. Wendy Lully, I know, is Baby Grace, is very interested. Hersha Parody, who was Mrs. Garvey, says, you know, let me know when I'm reading. I've been getting emails from the cast going, am I doing one? When am I doing one? My character was a baby. I don't have a lot of lines. Can I do it anyway? People are chiming in. And then I said, now Melissa Gilbert has been doing this podcast out of her cabin in the Catskills, just spent the last 2 days talking about her memories of Little House on the Prairie. So, yeah, we're all doing stuff. There are multiple plots afoot to have some kind of online cast reunion, cast chat thing, I'm doing my show, because, you know, I do my stand-up thing in New York, and I was supposed to go and do my show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch, on May 9th. Can't do it, right? No. I'm contracting with Spin Cycle New York City, Spin Cycle NYC, and go to their website. It's a thing called Stage It. So I'm going to be doing a whole live stream from my living room of my stand-up show on May 9th.
Wow. That's amazing.
Everything has come out. It's just exploded. I'm doing those cameo video greetings. I'm selling bonnets. I'm, like, being interviewed. But on May 9th, I'm setting up shop in the living room, and people can go to spincyclenyc.com and check it on my website, and they can absolutely get online tickets, if you will, virtual tickets. They're very cheap. And watch me do stand-up comedy in my living room. Wow. Live on May 9th, and we'll have Q&A in it too.
Now, at some point, knock on wood, we will be out of all of this.
Oh my God, right?
But what do you think, with what you're doing, has come out of this that you will continue? Because you may be on to internet gold here with this.
Right, I did not. I swear I did this because I needed something to focus and calm myself and think about and get out. You know, this will feel good. This will be comforting. And hey, maybe someone. And it's just like kablooey. People really like it. As people have said who've commented and emailed me and whatnot, thank you. It's so stressful. Everything is so stressful and terrifying right now. I mean, as I said, it's the horrible combination of boredom and traumatized. People are bored and horrifyingly traumatized at the same time. Psychologically, this is not good for you. And people are saying, this is wonderful. For an hour out of the day, I have this lovely afternoon moment where I sit and think about Laura Ingalls and Little House on the Prairie and watch you in a bonnet. And I talk. I do commentary in the book. I say, oh, yes, you see, in this chapter she's talking about, we have historical things we comment on. And it gets very funny. And as I said, they were talking about cornbread. I made cornbread in the morning and actually had homemade cornbread while I was doing the thing. I make stuff. It's crazy. It's very comforting to people. I think a lot more people now are going to be turning to the books. They're going to be watching the shows, which is great because it's like on multiple channels. I don't know what this all means. Like I said, now I'm going to be, everything's going to be online for a while. We're going to do a lot of that. Like I said, my stand-up show now, I'm doing all this stuff, Zoom, Be Live, Skype, what have you, Stage It, all these platforms, which a month ago I couldn't have told you what they were, and I'm doing all this. So technologically there's going to be a change. We're going to be doing so much with the Internet. And I think people are like realizing how much they did like Little House on the Prairie and why it was so comforting. I don't know what this means. I don't know. I don't know that in the future, is there some job where they pay me to sit around in a bonnet and read Little House? No, I don't think that's a thing. But I really like it. It's really fun. It's hilarious at times. It's great. People really enjoy it. And I enjoy it because I'm talking to them. So if I'm in the house all day, I'm not really alone because at least once a day I'm having a lovely conversation with about 1,500 people or so.
One of the things people don't realize when it comes to television shows is it's like any job that anyone else has. Mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. do a television show for a number of years, and then you might go on to other things. And just right. like when you're going to school, just because you went to school with a group of people doesn't mean you spend a lot of time with them. And I'm just wondering, now that you're doing this Little House on the Prairie read on Facebook every day, and you are reaching out to people who you worked with and worked on the show with, have you been in contact with some people now who you haven't been in contact with in years because of this coming together on Facebook?
Well, no, because weirdly, the cast of Little House on the Prairie are all insanely close. We are like an extended family. It's kind of most people who are in TV series together, really the majority, statistically, never speak to each other again after the show. They're like, bye, see ya. Certain casts remain friendly. I was always impressed that the cast of Gilligan's Island all stayed really close. It's very strange. Certain casts, a lot of the Waltons still hang out together. Some casts are really tight, and they stay friends after the show. Most do not. It's a handful of shows. Little House, we stayed shockingly close. We kept in touch, and then we kept getting back in touch. And then it was in the 90s we did some of the first cast reunion events together, and we liked it so much. The big one was, I guess it was like 95. We all went to Sonora. It was a whole benefit thing. It was a whole Western Film Festival and Little House on the Prairie Fest. And it was crazy. And some of us then had not seen each other in several years. And we just went bananas. And after that, you couldn't get us apart. And then we wound up having the 40th anniversary where a whole bunch of us went to Walnut Grove, Minnesota. We did the Today Show. We started hanging out together. Then we had the 45th anniversary. And really, since the 90s, most of us have been in touch. And since the 40th anniversary, we've practically been in each other's back pockets. As I said, I just talked to Charlotte. The other day, I just talked to Dan McBride, who played the guy I hit in the face with a chicken at the restaurant. Dean Butler and I were back and forth every day because he was reading on my Facebook page. It's crazy. So, yeah, and Charlotte, we are constantly talking to each other and emailing each other. I'm emailing them all today about something. And we're much, much, much closer than most people who were on a TV show together in the 1970s. Abnormally so.
I know you touched on it briefly, but I want to ask you a little bit about your show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. Tell us a little bit about it and how that has been going up until the point when we had to all shut down.
Well, it was going great guns. I had been doing stand-up comedy generally since I was 15, and then in 2002, I wound up doing this whole crazy one-woman show where I talked about all true stories from my life and about people picking on me and calling me a bitch and about being an ex-child star, and people really liked it. They liked it a lot, and I went, oh, this is good. So that became a thing, and I began touring all over the country. And then I started adding things, and I started going to France, and then we added video, and it became a whole extravaganza one-woman show. And then, and it was the brilliant director, Sue Hamilton, she's like, there could be video in this, we can do this, and we made it into a whole thing. Then I started doing the French version, because Patrick Dubatier wrote this whole French version, doing that and touring France. Then in France, I have a second show, Le Mal au Trésor, de Nelly Olsen. And we were plotting a third show when this all went to hell in a handcart. And so I've been doing that, and I was going to New York like every May, and it was like it was a ritual. People go, oh, let's all go to the Laurie Beecham Theater and see Allison for Mother's Day weekend. It was like my Mother's Day weekend ritual. People brought their mother. People said, what do you want for Mother's Day? I want to go see Nellie Olson swear on stage. So they'd all come to the show. Now, this year we can't do that. So what we're doing is a shortened version. It's going to be 30 minutes. We're calling it Confessions of a Prairie Terror, as opposed to my New York stage show, which is kind of a little bit R. This is more PG-13 because we're broadcasting out to the universe, so it's not NC-17 by any means. It's PG-13. It's fairly mild. But we will have some of the best stuff, absolutely, from my stand-up show, and I will include question and answer. Unlike my live show, I can't get the index cards from them, but I will have a thing where they can ask questions online, and I will take those questions and use them in the show.
Sounds like a lot of fun. You know, one of the things I've always enjoyed is talking to you because you're just so effervescent when it comes to the things you're working on. You truly do enjoy what you do. Anybody who's had the opportunity to read my book knows that you're an entire chapter.
I have a chapter in your book. I know. It's huge.
Yeah, so it's always a thrill to have you on the program and talk about some of the things that you do. Besides all of that, I mean, obviously you're not going too stir-crazy. Things are going well with you as you continue the quarantine?
Yeah, my husband and I are well. We have not gotten sick. Hallelujah. We have a lot of friends who are sick. We have friends who have been hospitalized. So far, everyone seems to have gotten out of the hospital or home. Several people have been in the hospital, a couple of close calls. Everybody's back home. Several people are very, very, very sick. Some are making good recovery. Some are clearly having, because what they're seeing with this virus is the recovery period can be quite long. There's weird relapses and after effects. The virus does things to your brain. It can cause permanent damage to your lungs. So people are really having a hell of a time of it. We also have friends who, because of the television industry is like, hi, we're close. So they had jobs either in TV or peripheral to TV. They did something that they only had a job because people were filming. They were, you know, connected to production. And they don't have a job. There isn't something else they can be doing. They weren't essential employees. They were kind of close. You know, they talk about many people are living paycheck to paycheck or only two paychecks away from real distress. And boy, is that hit in Los Angeles and California. It's bad. So we have friends who are struggling terribly financially. We have friends, you know, so we're like, do you need food? We have toilet paper. We have toilet paper. Do you need stuff? Anyone who's an actor, I'm hooking them up because I started doing Cameo. And it's a thing, it pays. People pay celebrities to do personalized special greetings. So I've called and said, are you doing that? Because you could be on that. There's all sorts of web platforms where artists can make money. And I've been trying to hook my friends up, like, have you tried this? Anything. I have a friend, I'm doing his laundry. He doesn't have laundry in his building, and he can't go to the laundromat. So I'm like, anything, you know, so we're trying to help our friends, check in on people. As I said, it's kind of crazy because Bob is going to work every day, but it's not a office that deals with, like, public coming in. He goes, gets in the bubble of his car and goes into the bubble of the office, and it's sealed off, and it's just him and a small group of people, and they're wearing masks, and they're socially distancing. And occasionally I make a foray to the store or the post office every few days, and that's with a mask and with gloves and all the sanitizing gel and wipes and whatnot. And it's terrifying because it's frightening. Well, Bob and I remember, you know, Bob ran the Southern California AIDS hotline. That's how we met. We met at the AIDS hotline, AIDS Project Los Angeles in the 80s. And we went through that where you had a disease. People didn't know how it worked. You suddenly got a phone call that your friends were sick. You suddenly got a phone call that several of your friends had just died over the weekend and nobody could explain to you what was happening. And you didn't know how it worked, and there was no cure, and there was no vaccine, and there was no treatment. Now at least there's a treatment for HIV. There's still no cure, but there's a treatment that at least keeps people alive, and we know how it works. We're now back to square one with this. We're so used to, oh, there's a disease, but I just call my doctor and I get a pill and I get better. We don't have that. There's not a pill to take for this yet. There is not the testing is still, they're getting that together, and there's not a vaccine, and there's not even a treatment, and they're discovering every single day new things about this virus, new, unfortunately, terrible things that it does to the body. So Bob and I are kind of having flashbacks to the early 80s when we were faced with a terrifying brand new disease, and what do we do? And then this one is spread through casual contact. This is spread by being in the same room with someone. So this is of historic, cataclysmic proportions. So for people who are home and are feeling stressed out and terrified, you're not crazy. This is really bad. This is legitimately terrible. But there's ways that we can emotionally and mentally survive, and the main one is to reach out to people, is to talk to each other. Get on the phone. Get on the internet. Get on whatever you got. And call your friends, call your relatives, FaceTime, Skype, Zoom, whatever the heck you got to do, and communicate with your fellow humans so you don't lose your marbles.
Excellent advice. And people can also check out your live readings of Little House on the Prairie. Again,
yep.
What time do you do it every day?
I do 1:30. If it's not going to be 1:30 Pacific time, California
right.
time, then I will post, hey, I had an interview, so it's at, you know, blah, blah, 2:30 or whatever. But it's at 1:30 every day.
So 1:30 Pacific time, that's 4:30 Eastern.
Yes, yes.
And people can check out the website, which is Bonnetheads, that's plural, bonnetheads.com.
Yep. And I'm on Facebook. And my Facebook, it's Allison Arngrim, and I set it to follow and to public, and y'all can jump on there. And I'm all over the place, yes.
Excellent.
And May 9th, did you spincyclenyc.com. You go there, and you can read about tickets in the show. It's great.
Excellent. Allison, always a joy to talk to you. Thank you very much for doing this, and stay safe.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And you guys, you're good up there? You're okay?
Yep. Stay safe.
I say tell everyone, wash your hands, stay safe, get some rest.
Absolutely. Stay safe, Allison. Stay safe.
Okay, thanks.
Actress Allison Arngrim. She's always a ton of fun. Again, you can catch her daily live readings of Little House on the Prairie on Facebook at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. You can check out the website bonnetheads.com for more information. You can also check out the site spincyclenyc.com to find out more about the upcoming digital version of her acclaimed show, Confessions of a Prairie Bitch. It's taking place in May. It's a more PG version of her show. This one's actually called Confessions of a Prairie Terror. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0558, and you'll find all the links I just mentioned. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to the author of You and the Internet of Things. And also, we do have an Idiot of the Day coming your way a little later on, but I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you right here, right now, so let's get right to it. A property manager called the Salt Lake City, Utah police to report one of his residents had stolen a golf cart. Officers located 54-year-old William Bradley in the stolen cart, covered in blood. He told police he had been in a fight with the Terminator and killed him. According to a doctor who treated him later, Bradley was under the influence of methamphetamine and has probably been up for days. Police checked Bradley's apartment and found a body, not that of the Terminator, but 58-year-old Robert Carter, who had been killed in an extremely violent and brutal manner. Bradley was arrested and charged with murder, assault, and theft of a golf cart. His bail was set at over $1 million. You know, if he does make bail, he'll have to make that promise.
I'll be back.
Anyway, let's get to our last guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Vicki McLeod is the author of many books. Her latest is called You and the Internet of Things. And these days, the internet has become an even more important part of our lives as we continue social distancing. Vicki joins us via Skype from British Columbia. Hi, Vicki.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being on the program with us. We were trying to hook up several times in the past to have you on the program to talk about some of the work you do, because on this program, we've had a chance to talk to one of your co-authors of a previous book, Digital Legacy Plan. We had Angela Crocker on, and she's always been raving about you. So we've been trying to touch base and have you on the show for various reasons, and we certainly have a reason now.
Right. The timing in a way is perfect, isn't it?
It is.
Particular subject.
I went to your website, which is VickiMacLeod.com, and Vicky is spelled with an I, by the way, not a Y, and found 10 ways to cope compassionately with COVID-19. What made you write that blog piece?
I think it was, you know, when we first got the news, at least here in British Columbia, that we had to begin self-isolating, I think a lot of people went into a state of fear, which is a perfectly natural reaction. You know, it's unknown. We don't know what this virus is going to mean. We still really don't know that much more about it. And I really felt like it was necessary to have some calming voices in the environment. And many people were starting to turn, of course, to digital connection. Going online, looking at blogs, looking at listening to podcasts, starting to kind of try to make sense of this, as everyone says, unprecedented set of circumstances that we're in. And I felt like we needed to also be really kind to ourselves during this time and to others, because right. None of us has had an opportunity to cope with anything quite like this in our lifetime. So the notion of how could we do this in a way that was kind, in a way that was compassionate, first and foremost toward ourselves, because now we are really in this relationship with self and, you know, possibly one or two others, depending on our household. So how can we do this and do this in a way that where we can cope with it, but that we can also be compassionate about it?
As someone who writes books dealing with the internet, again, your new book is called You and the Internet of Things, and we'll talk about that in a moment. As someone who writes books like these, in this crunch time that we're living in, are you yourself learning new things and new ways to use the internet that you maybe hadn't thought of or put into practice?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for all of us, of course, if you're completely tech savvy and you're, you know, a technology nerd, you've been out and you have an advanced knowledge of this kind of stuff anyway. But if, like me, you're somebody who lived most of your life or a good part of your life in the analog environment, if you have been maybe a reluctant adapter to technology, or maybe you have fear. So I know for me, one of the things that I really advocate for is that we use technology wisely and that we are fully human in this environment. That even though we're getting at it through metal and plastic and devices and that kind of thing, we're actually building real relationships with real people. And so for me, there's always this underlying theme in my work that's about using the technology in a way that really serves us as humans. And right now, there's this overriding need to connect. And we're really using technology, I think, for its highest purpose, which is to connect us all. But for myself, I mean, even with the book coming out in the middle of a pandemic that was new to the publisher, it's new to me, it's new to my publicist, you know, we are trying to navigate this. I've decided to offer a podcast about the content of the book. So I am relearning these skills around how to set up a podcast, how to get onto iTunes, all of the kinds of things that, you know, many years ago I did this. I haven't had to swim in that water for some time, but this is sort of forcing me to go into new skills and build new muscle. And I think for lots of people, they're having that experience. If not that it's a new technology, but they're having to find a new way to apply it to their existing work or to their daily life in some way.
Well, let's talk about the book. And again, the title is You and the Internet of Things. And right off the bat, tell us about the title, why it's called that.
It's partly called that because, you know, the Internet of Things, or the IoT is the acronym that we use, is, I think, it's emerging technology. You really, if you were out shopping, for example, for an appliance or a new toaster or something right now, you would have a really hard time finding what we call like a dumb appliance, something that's not smart, that's not capable of connecting, that doesn't have some form of artificial intelligence driving its function. So we call that the IoT. I wanted to focus my work on the sort of individual application for IoT. There are literally, you know, hundreds of books that talk about the Internet of Things or artificial intelligence as it applies to business or as it applies to various industries. But there's very little out there actually for the consumer, just the average individual consumer of these technologies. So I thought, well, this is a gap. I noticed it myself in my own exploration of using the IoT, but most profoundly, I noticed it with the generation that's ahead of me, which would be my mother's generation. You know, when I wrote my last book, the one you referenced with Angela, my mom was reading it very devotedly, you know, and at one point, about halfway through the book, she peeked over the cover and said, "Honey, what's a URL?" You know, which is the basic website address that most of us, you know, who've been using computers since, you know, the 80s or 90s know what that is. But for my mom, who's not a computer user, that was a mystery. But my mother may not use a computer, but she uses things. And if she's going to go out and participate fully in life, she's a vigorous 80-year-old, then she's going to need to understand at least the basics of the Internet of Things in order to make choices as a consumer. So I really wanted to fill that gap, the gap that wasn't being filled in terms of consumer information, but also in terms of those who are not necessarily early adapters or even adapters to technology.
What do you say to people who are concerned about what they see as, in some cases, overreach? And by that, I mean, everything, as you say, seems to be connected. Your house is talking to everything in the house, and everything is being monitored. What do you say to people who are concerned about that?
I would say they have a reason to be concerned. I think that, and in the book, I in some detail go into their very real concerns about privacy and security. The more devices that you bring into your home that are internet connected, the more vulnerable you become to potentially being hacked or to having your privacy or your data used in a way that you don't want it used. I would say universally, we sign up for whatever new service that we sign up for. We click yes, we accept the terms of service without reading or understanding the terms of service and what we may be giving away. So throughout the book, I sort of offer worksheets. They're downloadable if you're doing this online, where you can kind of assess your own comfort level with understanding that if you are going to, and this applies regardless of whether you're doing the IoT connected devices. This is true even by you having a laptop or a smartphone. You know, the fact that you carry around a smartphone in your pocket actually means that you're vulnerable as well. But more so, it amplifies this issue. So it's really a trade-off between the sort of the convenience and maybe the fun of having these devices and the very real concerns that you're giving away data and you are, in fact, opening and making vulnerable your environment to hacking. And there's ways to be careful. You know, there's and in the book, I talk about some of the things that people should consider as they're getting into these, using these devices more. But at the same time, we're not there yet where the industry is able to sort of seamlessly protect us from the vulnerability. And we're not there yet universally in terms of what the data is being used for. It's different in different countries. It's different for different kinds of devices and uses. So it's sort of buyer beware. And be cautious and understand your own tolerance. Like, what is your own level of, how tolerant are you of that risk?
You mentioned the worksheets that are in your book, and you created these worksheets, of course. So in creating the worksheets, I'm assuming that at the time when you were writing them out, you actually worked it out yourself. Were you surprised at all in your level of concern when you created the worksheets and probably filled them out yourself to see how you felt about them?
Yeah, totally. That's such a great question, right? We always, that's one thing I love about the writing process is I'm always learning. And certainly for this book, it was very research heavy. I am not a technology expert. I am someone who's been in the digital environment for many years and has sort of been this voice and this advocate for, you know, helping people to cross the digital divide. But for sure, I became very aware of the potential vulnerabilities. And one thing that I recommend to people and that I did myself is to go in and update your passwords and make good, strong passwords. The passwords that the manufacturer gives you with most devices, not only are they known by the manufacturer, there are actually websites that list these passwords. So anybody who's somewhat tech savvy can actually go and investigate these lists and find out the passwords for your devices because they are, in a sense, public information. They're not put up there by the manufacturers, but there's a hacking community that keeps track of these things. So one of the very first things I did as I was writing the book was go in and update and change and strengthen all of my passwords, particularly those that are around things like bank accounts and business accounts and those areas where, you know, really a hack could be quite devastating.
I'll bet when you first started this book, you never thought that at the time of its coming out, it was going to be so timely.
Yeah, I had no, yeah, of course, you know, my big concern with writing a book like this or any book on a technological subject, of course, is how quickly the technology changes. You know, often I would say, you know, as I'm writing this sentence, this is probably changing. But I, of course, could not have predicted that we'd be in a situation where so many people would be so reliant on the digital environment in terms of maintaining their connection, in terms of getting information, and in terms of just simply being entertained. You know, many people are finding themselves with a lot of time on their hands and a big transition going on in terms of moving their work home, in terms of being able to connect with loved ones across the globe. So I feel like the book is very, very timely because it's very practical. So if you feel like you're someone that you're out of your depth and trying to understand this stuff, And the other problem that we have right now is that many of the service providers who are usually really, I find, quite excellent in offering advice and information, they're swamped. It's hard to get your internet service provider on the phone right now. They're sending out a lot of DIY emails telling people, here's how you fix this yourself, because they're, you know, their staff are sick, their staff are home. They're, like many of us, they're working on restricted hours. So, you know, this is actually a guide. It's a book that kind of walks you through a lot of the steps that you might need to take in order to make sure that you're safe, that you're secure, and that you have the convenient apps and devices that may serve your life right now.
The book is You and the Internet of Things. As you mentioned earlier, you're learning some new tricks when it comes to writing, publishing, and publicizing a book at this time. So how does one get your book, especially in this time?
Well, the book is available on Amazon, and of course, Amazon is, you know, shipping by priority, so I don't think that my book would be considered an essential. However, you can get it through Amazon, and people are getting them, I've been told. You can visit my website, of course, and order there. The publisher does have copies. It's Self Counsel Press, and they will ship. As well, you can order from your local bookstores, and many of them right now are having curbside pickup or delivery services. So those are all the ways, and it is available as an ebook. As well, I do have the podcast. It's available. You can search for it on iTunes or your podcast player. It's called You and the Internet of Things. And that much of the content of the book I'm offering, the publisher and I are offering it as a kind of a gift at this time so people can get the information they might need to feel comfortable.
Excellent. And we'll put all those links up on the website as well. The podcast and the book, same title, You and the Internet of Things. Vicki, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. It's really been a pleasure.
Vicki MacLeod, author of You and the Internet of Things. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show number 0558, and you'll find links to Vicki's site, where you can also find a link to her podcast, which is the same name as her book. You can also find links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Cops in Visalia, California didn't have a challenge finding a group of alleged thieves after they left a trail of meat following the recent robbery of a market. Police responded to a burglary call at the Jalisco Meat Market. Upon arrival, they reportedly caught an adult and a boy leaving the shop. Thinking there were more suspects, cops followed a literal trail of meat to an apartment nearby where they found more people allegedly involved in the meat robbery. Upon executing a search warrant at the premises, authorities arrested 6 adults and 5 minors. In total, 13 people were cuffed in relation to the alleged meat theft. While searching the home, cops allegedly found some of the pilfered meat being cooked. The suspects were charged with burglary, burglary during a state of an emergency, looting, providing false information to a police officer, resisting arrest, and warrants. Now, why, oh why, would you, in the theft of a meat market, leave a trail of meat from said theft to your house? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program, number 0558. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0558. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberstationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirTracker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
been getting jiggy with Peter Anthony Holder and the Stuff File program, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. He's a bad mamma jamma, and after he spends some chill time in his crib, he'll be back to get down with his bad self. Word up.